Welcome to Rights Watch, a program about human rights around the world from Human Rights Watch. I'm Jesse Graham. This week we have an update on the conflict in Sri Lanka, and we'll hear how indigenous communities in Ecuador are fighting big oil.
Because the river that they live off of and have lived off of for millennia can't supply their food anymore.
First, to Sri Lanka. More than 200,000 people are trapped in the Vani area of Sri Lanka. Sri Lankan government forces are shelling in no-fire zones, crowded with civilians. And the Tamil Tiger rebels have blocked the civilians from leaving the area, using them as human shields. It's difficult to get accurate information about the conflict, because the Sri Lankan government has blocked the media and independent observers from the area. But earlier this week, we spoke to a doctor at a makeshift hospital in Putamatalan, inside the no-fire zone. He said that dozens of dead and wounded civilians were being brought into the hospital every day. The interview was interrupted by shelling.
Sorry, there was a close shell attack now. All civilians now, they are in the floor. In front of there are patients, they all lying in the floor. People are running.
The doctor later explained that an artillery shell had landed steps away from the hospital. Two people died in that attack. Meanwhile, the Sri Lankan government denies launching attacks into the no-fire zone. We'll have more about this story as it develops. You can see photos from the conflict on our website. That's hrw.org. The people of the Ecuadorian Amazon say Chevron turned their rainforest into a toxic waste dump. Joe Berlinger's documentary, Crude, is about the lawsuit against the oil company. 30,000 Ecuadorians have joined the suit. Many of the plaintiffs are indigenous people. The film begins and ends with an elder of the Kofan tribe singing about the devastation of her community. I recently spoke with Joe Berlinger. He told me about the first time he visited the Kofan people in the Amazon.
People were sitting around a fire near the river's edge, eating canned tuna, you know, whatever the Ecuadorian equivalent of Costco would be. There was a giant vat of cheap tuna that they were eating out of. And this is deep in the heart of the Amazon, because the river that they live off of and have lived off of for millennia, you know, they can't supply their food anymore. So, you know, the people, you know, culturally, financially, medically, I mean, these communities have really suffered.
Berlinger said it was that can of tuna that inspired him to make the film. The lawsuit is working its way through the Ecuadorian court system, very slowly. Much of the documentary takes place in the Amazonian jungle, where some of the case is being argued.
What was fascinating for me was that a big chunk of the evidentiary phase of the trial was actually argued in front of these pollution sites. So you have, you know, lawyers from both sides in jungle gear, and everyone's, you know, wrapped up in you know, long sleeve clothing and hats, because we were in a malaria zone. I mean, one thing the film doesn't demonstrate is just how awful the place smells from the pollution. I mean, you go back to your hotel room at night and you have your eyes are just, you know, burning from being around fumes all day. And I can only imagine what it's like to live near these areas.
The film focuses on the plaintiff's lead lawyer, Pablo Fajardo, who's fighting the case against Chevron with the backing of a Philadelphia law firm.
The film works as a movie, I think, because the story is really about him. This is a guy who, young lawyer, 34 years old, came from an incredibly impoverished background. He was an oil field worker. He's from the region. He worked in the fields. He saw the devastation, and even as a teenager, he started a human rights office in the little town of Shushufindi, went to law school through correspondence school, paid for by the Catholic Church, who saw that he had a bright future. And ultimately, he became the lead attorney on this case that Chevron, I believe, never thought would go anywhere in Ecuador.
Arvin Ganeshan is the head of the Business and Human Rights Program at Human Rights Watch. He joined our conversation. He says people in Burma and Nigeria have also tried suing oil companies for human rights abuses.
What this shows is how difficult it is to get any kind of redress for what a company does abroad. And in the absence of these cases, there really isn't any place for 30,000 people to turn. This case and these cases are really a last resort for people because the government isn't going to do anything to help them. The company certainly isn't on its own. And there's no international body or national body that's looking to see what companies do abroad to hold them accountable if they do something wrong. If you think about what happened in Ecuador and pretend that it happened in Houston, or even look at the Exxon Valdez or something, even though it's contentious and there are problems, there is some way to hold the company accountable for what it did. In Ecuador, in Nigeria, in Burma, there's nothing.
Although even with the Exxon, just adding to the point of how difficult it is to actually win these things, you know, even the Exxon Valdez, which is on American soil and, you know, a clear-cut accident that required, you know, action. It took 17, and there was a judgment. It took 17 years after the judgment for the plaintiffs to get any kind of settlement and at a greatly reduced level. So people who had been waiting a lifetime, literally, for, say, $150,000 payment to compensate them for their lost business ended up getting a check for $20,000 or $25,000 after 17 years. So, you know, these are very difficult cases. We wanted to not hide the fact in the film that this is a for-profit law firm, in part because it's one of Chevron's main arguments. Somehow, you know, there is not a tradition in Ecuador of these kinds of cases. And therefore, as we see in the film, the local attorneys make a big deal about the fact that this is a business sponsored to make a profit, as if somehow to obfuscate the issues at hand.
Oil production in the Ecuadorian Amazon began in 1972. Part of Chevron's defense is that the company, which was then Texaco, handed over their operations to the state-run oil company in the early 1990s. So they say the Ecuadorian government is responsible for the damage. The case isn't going to be resolved anytime soon.
If there's one lesson from the film, it's that it's pretty clear that if a group of local indigenous people who face this type of problems, only recourse is a lawsuit that's going to take decades and pit them against a multi-billion dollar corporation, then the existing laws and policies to hold people accountable are just not good enough. So the combination of public awareness, public pressure, these kinds of lawsuits, maybe shareholder action and the like are the best tools that exist now. But what that means is the tools aren't good enough, and we really need to start thinking about new laws and new policies to hold institutions accountable wherever they operate.
And of course, to keep them from polluting in this way, correct? I mean, how are we doing with that? Is there a sense that Chevron is learning from this, that other oil companies and extractors are learning from this?
I think incrementally companies like to argue that they are more environmentally sensitive today than they were 10, 15, 20 years ago. But that's a reflection of changes in public policy and exposés of what they've actually been doing. And if you look at that, then the logical answer is if you really want them to be more responsible, you need new laws and policies in place.
That was Arvind Ganeshan of Human Rights Watch. For more about Crude and filmmaker Joe Berlinger, please visit crudethemovie.com. Sting and Trudy Styler have cameo roles in the film, and their organization, the Rainforest Foundation, has helped to bring fresh drinking water to the people of the Ecuadorian Amazon. That's Rights Watch for this week. Human Rights Watch is an independent organization dedicated to defending and protecting human rights around the world. For more about us, including audio, video, and multimedia features, please visit hrw.org. Thanks for listening to Rights Watch. I'm Jesse Graham.